stuck Langevin in there.
Good. Okay, if I can interrupt. This is a works. It is 1:04 p.m. Tuesday, July 3rd, 2018. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission. With me are Commissioners Brian Krashus and Julie Fedorchak. Did either have any opening comments?
I do not.
Whose portfolio is it?
Mine.
Okay. Before I turn it over to you, then, I'll just read in. I don't think this is actually a case, but I'm looking at Alana or Jack if I misstate this. We have four cases that are open that could be kind of connected to this discussion. Those are PU-10-218, the Bakken Link case, PU-18-186, the Langdon Wind case, PU-11-662, Elite Clean Energy, and PU-17-102, NSP's 230 KV line. Is that stated correctly for the lead-off for the work session? Okay. So then I'll turn it over to you, Julie, as a portfolio holder.
Okay. Very good. Well, I think that there's a memo that Jerry laid out. Sort of, there's three separate issues. They all kind of relate back to this overriding issue of the changes made during construction on some of these projects. So, Jerry, do you want to talk about each one of them separately, or how would you envision being most effective? I think that I was going to suggest an order, but it almost seems like the company outlined the case for the Langdon Wind with the most clarity on the is that the repowering?
Yeah, we could start there if you'd like.
Because I think it gets to the whole issue of what is the which document is the most important or dictates what has to be done, the order or statute. Am I correct in that on the Langdon when that really kind of came to light the most?
I think it comes down to that.
Yeah. Okay, so why don't we start with that one, and then we can work through the other two after that.
So if you recall, we've had discussions for a long time about how much capacity a wind farm has, and we ended up using the words up to in the orders, up to 159 megawatts. There's language in the statute, and the whole purpose of the changes in the statute was to allow them flexibility to add capacity to an existing site certificate. And so in this case, we have Langdon Wind that didn't want to amend their certificate. They didn't feel that it was necessary because the statute allows them to add capacity in the footprint there. And so that's kind of the crux of the issue. Do we want to issue a notice on this repowering, or just let them say it's covered by the certification document that they filed.
Yeah, well, this has been something that we've experienced in a number of cases. Yep. And we've previously, basically because it's been the position of our attorneys that the order, whatever they say in the order, takes precedence over what the legislature did in changing the statute. At least that's how I've interpreted your guys' advice. And so we've required companies to change their orders in order to do the things that the statute currently allows them to do.
This is Alana. I don't know if this is working.
Yes.
Okay. And I don't know where to sit for it, but I don't think it's appropriate to say takes precedence. I think they're both applicable. They're both applicable. The statute did not undo your orders in any way, shape, or form. The policy behind it may be different. And remember, we had quite a bit of discussion about, right after it passed, about whether we should go back and correct those orders to indicate the new policy or the more clear policy after that act was passed. And we said, well, companies can ask one at a time. We're not going to try to do, limited resources and staff, and we're not going to try to do 100 of these in one fell swoop. But I just wanted to correct the precedence because it's not exactly accurate.
Okay. Well, here's the line that stands out to me from the June 26th letter from on behalf of Langdon Wynn from Crawley Fleck. The Siting Act clearly provides that a utility may increase or decrease a facility's capacity by way of a certification filing and contains no requirement that an order and or certificate be amended for a utility to invoke this statutory right. And I sat through those legislative discussions and it was extremely clear that they wanted these companies to be able to do this without a lot of hassle. And so we've been trying to provide it, but we've had some hassles because we've been monkeying around with these fixing of the orders. So, is what they're saying here, is that accurate? Why not? Why do we view it differently?
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. The statement is not inaccurate, but what you end up with then is a very awkward and hard to implement going forward administrative procedure because you have an order that says one thing and you have a wind farm that is something else. And it's almost ministerial, but I think some of us, think that the wisest thing to do is to just fix the order so that going forward that certificate that's hanging on the office wall says what that wind farm is, or at least doesn't say the opposite of what the wind farm is. So it's tweaking it. It's not a power struggle. I think everybody recognizes that the statute was intended to do exactly what's going on here, to allow it flexibly, but we had this previous order that said something else and needs tweaking. And so the cleanest thing, Jack and I talked about this morning, if the commission were to just say, yeah, we think it's okay, and send a letter to that effect, perhaps, or didn't even send a letter, just close the case, you're going to have an order out there that isn't totally accurate.
Because it says X
yes.
number of megawatts.
And 10 years from now, when there's a whole new group of people here, maybe some of you will still be here, but people are going to be like going around looking for where's the authority for this particular wind farm, okay, and not finding it. And if you were to issue a new order with the right number on it, then I think that is a blatant violation of statute because you have a simple statute that says if you want, you can amend any order you want as long as you give notice to the company. Okay, we have a statute that applies to every order we've ever written that says give notice. So what I'm thinking is you should have a notice to fix this order. It doesn't mean it's a notice of a whole new citing proceeding or anything like that. It's a notice of amending the order. That's where I'm coming from on Langdon, which is a different question than some of these others. It's a little bit of jumping through hoops, but it's a predicament that happened to arise, and no one got ahead of it, you know, 6 months earlier when it wouldn't have had a time constraint. I mean, company could have asked to tweak this order a few months back. We could have tried to do all of
well,
that after.
It begs the question of whether we should be putting a number in our orders.
That's true. That's
with this true. Type of a law going that's forward. Available for them to
the
change.
Going forward thing, yes.
It also begs the question of what happens in this case. So if it's the intent to issue a different order after having had a notice as they want, the notice is going to be longer than a week, and by next week they've already threatened that they're going to start work without it. So what do we do about that? Is that something we would ignore or what? It's kind of sad that it's that
well,
type of a time
then
frame.
The order wouldn't have to, I mean, they can do this. They don't need authority from us to change to upgrade it.
Right.
They don't need that. That's clear as can be in the law. It's so changing the order is more of a administrative thing. Shouldn't have any impact on the construction that I can see if they have to go through this.
But if we issue a notice and someone comes and says, yeah, I object, then I suppose we would need to have a hearing for them. And what would we be having the hearing about since it's already under construction?
Well, I guess the order needs to be, or the notice needs to be written in a way where it isn't about whether or not they get to increase the capacity.
I think as we're dialoguing, it looked like Jack had something to add, or maybe not.
No, I was just preparing to respond to a question that you had, but it sounds like you guys already worked through that.
So what would the notice be?
Commissioner, I haven't put a whole lot of thought into with regards to how the notice would be, but I would assume that it would be similar to all the other notices that we have done with regards to amending citing orders. It wouldn't be a whole lot different. This isn't a new issue with amending orders. We've done it all the time. The issues
the company
have always been the same.
The notice be narrowly tailored to the specific issue of removing the designated capacity threshold contained in the order provision.
And for other amendments as well, it is narrowly tailored to that as well, whatever issue they're requesting to be amended. We don't open it up to a whole new citing hearing.
Right.
Right.
Could it be like notice of intent to amend order?
That is what we've done in the past, in my recollection.
And if someone requested a hearing and had, I can't imagine what it would be, but someone comes in and objects, what is our response? Why are we having a hearing for you when we've already decided that we're doing this?
Well, the commission has received a number of requests for hearing, and they have chosen not to due to the fact that they didn't feel it had merit to continue to have a hearing. And so the commission would have an opportunity to have that hearing if they so choose, just as I would assume the commission would have the ability to have a hearing on a continuing basis with regards to a site certificate if they feel that it's in the public interest.
Okay. And then outside of that, this is a kind of a different subject but on the same case. To grant them the new certificate and not mention a capacity. I'm thinking different industries here, but, you know, we talk all the time about what pipeline takeaway or what rail capacity is, or do we want to move into a decade or two decades from now and people wonder how much wind capacity we've sited? We have no idea. It could be 3,000 megawatts. It could be 30,000 megawatts. We just, is there anywhere where we're keeping track then anymore of what we have approved?
I would have to defer to Pat on that, Commissioner, but I do believe that probably the footprint law in a lot of different industries makes it a little more difficult to track the changes to infrastructure within the footprint area.
Because it's interesting in pipelines, you know, the pipeline authority is constantly planning and using that knowledge for planning purposes. So it seems odd that we're going to cease to keep track of things anymore. But maybe we will be keeping track of it in the reclamation part, and that they have to certify their.
And if that's information, I apologize, Mr. Chairman. But if that is information that the commission would like to continue to gather, that staff would certainly be able to continue to gather the nameplate capacity of these wind farms, even as they're changing going forward.
It seems like there's some relevance to it.
Well, we could always just have them file the, include that in their filings, and then keep it, you know, keep it updated in our records that way.
I keep looking, thinking of consistency, and I was thinking the same thing. If you add booster pumps, for example, to a pipeline, and increase the capacity, or, you know, to me it goes back to how do we remain consistent across different types of energy production in terms of nameplate capacity and having it clean, as you mentioned, Alana, down the road, so a commission doesn't look at, well, wait a second, it's 20% larger than what the certificate says. I think that would get messy down the road. What's the simplest way to incorporate that?
Where you're keeping that record. I mean, does everybody go running to the order to look at the nameplate capacity, or is there another place to keep that record?
It doesn't have to be the order. You just don't want it to be the part order and part something else, and then you don't know.
Is it an amendment, essentially, or more than that?
It's in the 10-year plans.
In regards to wind farms, it'll probably also be in the certificate of continuing operation through the decommissioning plans.
That's probably the best source of that information going forward. So there is no, like, some kind of a legal precedent that says in a regulatory thing like this where these projects have been approved, and maybe someone would have objected had it been a larger size, but they didn't object because of this size. But now the law changes. There's nothing legally that prohibits us from following the new law as opposed to the old orders.
No, you're pretty much bound by the law. I mean, you have to follow the new law. But just that they don't undo the old order. New law doesn't undo the old order unless specifically stated and then questioned.
Yeah, and it didn't specifically state it. I'm sensing we all want to follow the new law, but just make sure that we're not violating the trust or something of people who relied on what we said our order was way back when, and the legislature didn't address those old orders specifically when we now choose to ignore what was in those old certificates.
Those old orders.
I really don't think it's ever going to be an issue, but just want to make sure.
So you're saying you think they do need to do the notice and...
Well, just based on what Alana said, maybe we do, but if... I guess at this point I was just talking about I think I'm okay with following the new law and kind of generally doing what they want here. based on what Alana said, I think we probably do have to issue a notice, but do it narrowly.
The notice is to amend the order. If we're not going to require them to amend the order, then we don't have to do the notice.
But I thought the message was that we got to kind of do something to get rid of these old orders so that someday someone isn't dragging that out and saying, here's an order in a case that's never been revised that says there's a capacity limit on this project and you're over it.
Well,
so
but
I want to actually do something to change those.
I thought we were exploring other ways to do that and track those changes.
I think we were talking about tracking the capacity, but the only other way to do to get that capacity out of this order is to you either change the order or you do some kind of letter or something that then you have to remember to attach to this order all the time, which we staffers, I think, are recommending is probably a bad idea.
To just attach a letter?
Yeah, because it's not going to have lasting legitimacy. Pat, you and I have lived with this kind of thing now for many years in other situations.
What Alana's suggesting today is what we've always done in the past. If somebody wanted to amend, wanted to change something in the order, we would do a notice of opportunity to amend the order. And so what I see is continuing with what we've done in the past.
But did any of those threaten us that they're not going to wait until the notice is timed out?
Is there a concern that I have with that?
Did the previous ones ever do that?
They would wait till we finished.
Right, so this is different then.
Well, we don't know that they're not going to wait till we finish, do we?
Well, the letter says they're starting Tuesday.
I guess.
But it's not an issue, that piece of it.
Would we?
This is just.
I think that was the Bridger case. We have, if that really is a concern of the company, we have been flexible with allowing them to begin construction subject to staff approval and a notice of opportunity running, allowing the public to have the opportunity if there is a valid concern.
But just then that's, but let's be all on the same page that they don't need approval to begin construction.
That's what I thought Julie said earlier, is that this is not a matter of whether they can go forward with the, because the statute says they can, but this is a matter of amending the order. If you don't amend the order, I don't know that it's kind of like an administrative.
We're getting wrapped up on process. Yeah. I think it's clearly they can do it. They're going to do it. They've got plans to start on next Tuesday. So the only matter really for us to determine is what, if anything, are we going to require them to do for amending the order.
What would there be a benefit to just... Is it beneficial to do these one by one or to just look at all of our old cases?
That's a question for you.
Could we change this in the law? Could there be something added to the 4922 that would make all, that would take care of this?
Next session.
Or that allows them to amend their order with for thresholds without a notice of opportunity for hearing or something like that. I'm just trying to avoid a whole bunch of notices and just a lot of paperwork shuffling for everybody.
I'm optimistic that there is a way to do that in the law, too.
Commissioner Fedorchak, and I just want to make sure that I understand this correctly. Because before they can actually do any activities, they have to certify to us a number of things. And I think including the fact that they'll comply with all the applicable conditions and protections of the siting laws, rules, and commission orders previously issued for the part of the facility. So they're certifying that they are complying with our order And that's really what kind of has risen to this issue, in my understanding, and I might be, maybe I misunderstood this. I thought the company was essentially saying, due to the law change, it isn't an applicable order anymore, and which would be up to the commission's discretion to make a determination. However, there are administrative, I guess, difficulties with that.
Langdon Wind has certified it will comply with all applicable conditions and protections and citing laws and rules, and this is not applicable.
That's what they're claiming.
Yeah. Makes sense to me.
That's the commission's interpretation of it and decision.
But then what does that do to our issue on the order? Where do we still stand?
We got to clean up those orders.
Regardless, we would have clean orders.
We have to clean up the orders. I, back about one comment ago, I think you might be making a huge mistake to try to stick something in the law. I think the paperwork shuffle for the wind farm numbers might be 10 times easier than mucking with the footprint law in the legislative session, but that's just my opinion, okay?
Noted with lots of experience.
Right. Anyway.
I'm assuming that law is going to be opened anyway, but.
That's right, but do we want to be proposing something to it? And I think we're getting a little twisted in this notice. The notice is clearly about tweaking the order to make it consistent with what the footprint law says and with some kind of change that has no environmental impact, as what I understand from the certification. So, but you cannot foresee what kind of comment or request for hearing you're going to get, and I caution you not to prejudge all the potential hypothetical ones. I can't think of one. But I wouldn't want the commission to be saying what it would or wouldn't do if one came in that raised a legitimate question of some kind. And I can't think of that. But it scares me. Pardon me?
The other case that's
it does scare me that the commission is today thinking what its answer would be to that, which includes to me whether they have a statutory right to do it. There might be a set of facts and a brilliant legal argument that convinces us that they don't. I can't think of it today. But I caution you against assuming that. You issue your notice as narrowly as possible. You can acknowledge in there, it said this, the statute changed. They're proceeding to construct, okay? But we're not taking any enforcement action. You don't have to say that. And if something comes in that you have to stop and think through, you cross that bridge when you get to it.
That's a good point. Thank you.
Well, I mean, that is the absolute most conservative approach. I just think if I'm a legislator and I went through this and I told us that this is what we wanted and they approved this, and then we're creating this additional red tape for them to go through to get there. I just don't think that sits well.
I don't think we're creating any red tape, though.
A notice and a notice opportunity for hearing. A potential somebody comes forward and says we don't like this for X, Y, and Z, and then they've got a bunch of hassles on their hands again. And that's not consistent. I'm looking at the definitions and everything spelled out here, and it just doesn't feel consistent to me.
Well, if an entity, a party, has some kind of big problem with this repowering, that can come before you, whether you have a notice or not. That's number one. I mean, if there's any merit to it, it can be brought to your attention, and the company will have a bunch of hassles, whether you have a notice or not. And if your notice is finely tailored to, we need to fix this order to comply with the statute, you put it out there. But every issue that comes up doesn't necessarily have to have merit to that question either. So you don't know what's going to come out. Probably nothing. But you can't really, I don't think you can guarantee that nothing will come out. And I don't think you have to guarantee. So, I don't know. Jack, help me here.
Alon, I think we're on the same page with regards to that. And particularly with if the public trust continues during the operation of this, and if anybody would want to come in and file a formal complaint or any sort of complaint requesting hearing, they would be able to do so regardless. If not, if we didn't have the continuing obligation, we wouldn't need a certification at all. In fact, we would just say, once we give you that site certificate, don't certify anything. Just do whatever you want within that area. Just don't break the law.
Well,
so we have that continuing oversight over that, and that allows us to look at that certification document, see, yes, that continues to not have any adverse effects on the people and citizens and environment in that area, if we feel the need to intervene.
Okay, I'm just going to throw this one thought out, and it's probably nothing that we really have to think about, but if the rotor diameter is increasing from 77 to 91 meters, do we have to consider anything that's happening up in the air in terms of more predatory birds being hit by the blades? Or is that, I'm just putting it out.
Somebody could claim that. But I think if the notice says there's an intent to amend the order, it's not a question of whether they're able to make their changes. Well, then if somebody files something on those, we can say that it's outside of the scope of the notice.
And we're assuming the decibel levels are, with the new turbines, are still within the threshold when applicable?
They've done the studies on this and included that as part of their application. So they've gone through.
Blades basically just make a whoosh, whoosh noise, right? Is there?
That's how they sound.
That's the technical term for it.
Yeah, the technical term, I believe, is whoosh, whoosh.
So I guess I think that was probably the company's concern. They didn't want to open it up.
Yeah.
They've done the shadow flicker, the sound, looking at the cultural resources hasn't.
Yep.
Oh, they're doing cultural resources, too.
And I guess one thing I would like to point out is the certification allows them to bypass the siting process in order to more expeditiously build this facility according to the laws, according to the minimal adverse effects of the public and the environment. And even if we have to do a notice of opportunity, you're talking about a matter of 30 days of a difference, a notice to amend the order. It's still much shorter than a siting process, much less resource comprehensive. And I understand there is some concern that it may be red tape, but I'm just saying relative to the red tape that they would have to go through for a siting process, it's minimal.
Well, I don't disagree with that. It just seems that it's overly complicated.
It might be the only thing we can do efficiently, though, to make sure that these things are cleaned up as they go, as more and more of these change. Does that cost us a lot? Is this one of those we have to advertise in every county paper multiple times, or is it the? Is that it? Do we have to do the dailies, too, or just the one county paper, or two if it crosses
the
line?
The official county paper is the true requirement, legal requirement.
So that's not too expensive then.
Well, I guess I think that we could find another way to clean these up. I'm just going to continue to say that. I do not agree that this is the only way to approach this.
Is this a real question, not rhetorical. Is this the best way to clean it up for these cases until we think of the best way to clean it up? Because it seems to me these that are knocking on the door need to get handled. And so if we haven't figured out the best way, then maybe we just take the next best way for these and until we come up with it.
Well, I guess that it comes back to this question of whether we agree or not that the Siting Act provides that they can increase or decrease their capacity and doesn't require the order be amended to trigger that type of a change. I mean, and it doesn't say anything in the law about, you know, the entity can proceed, provide the certification, et cetera, change the order, and then it can do this. It doesn't say anything about that. So it seems like the actual process for adapting, that's on us to figure out without adding additional burdens to the company and a notice of opportunity for hearing. And that is a burden on the company, not us. So if you guys can tell me or convince me that there's something that the law would, because it's always bothered me the way we've handled this. But I've never had an attorney on the other side point it out in a way that makes sense to me to be able to say, yes, this is the problem. That the law was changed and we still make them go through the hassles of fixing the order. We should be able to have a different way of doing that. Not amending the order without a notice, I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying some other administrative tool that we use for tracking the changes that are made allowed for under the law that conflict with our orders. And I think that responsibility is on us, not the companies.
I suppose I should know this, but refresh me, lawyers. This happens all the time within the law. Something is a normal way of doing business, and other sections of law get built around that, and then all of a sudden the legislature goes a different direction. And we don't always catch all those things, and so we have those conflicting things in law. And sometimes we have each session there's a rewrite bill that fixes a bunch of those things. But is that the only way to get them out, or is there more of an administrative way to get rid of old laws that conflict with new laws? Because that's really what we have here, even though it's not a law, it's an order, it's sitting there, and we need to find the most efficient way of making those current, up to date, and current with a new law.
Commissioner, or Mr. Chairman, I imagine then we have two conflicting laws. We do our best to reconcile the two of them and operate with them both. And to the extent that we can't, then we try to follow the intent as best as we can with regards to the conflicting laws.
But the old law still hangs on there until the legislature comes and it gets rid of that section or something like that.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
So in the same way, is it logical to say sort of the same thing here? These are there. They're not the intent anymore, but we need a procedure to just get them corrected so that they're not just lingering out there. Because I understand Alana to say it's not a very good thing to just attach a letter to these files saying, we decided to ignore this. You are also saying that we need an action?
I'm saying a lot of this is up to the commission's ability to interpret their laws and discretion of how they're going to administer these cases. And that's, I guess, what Alana and I both said. It was just the suggestion from the reconciling the possible ambiguity of these laws was the approach that we were going for.
I mean, I'm not saying that we won't ever have the official amending process in the future for things that require that, but I don't think we could call it something else, an attachment to an order, pursuant to Century Code 4922 point whatever, that allows companies to do these things without any official change in the order or a notice. This order has been changed to be whatever. This nameplate capacity is now 200 or whatever it is. I mean, I'm just thinking out loud, but we could come up with something else. Or, yeah, take off the number altogether. Or if we want to keep tracking the numbers, we could do it like that. It just isn't so hard because we don't have to amend the order each time.
If you agree with what the filing the company has made that says this part of the order is no longer applicable, it seems like you could just have a statement in the case that says this part of the order is no longer applicable.
Yeah. You could cite the Century Code and the fact that they came in and certified that they're going to update the number and this part of the order is no longer applicable.
So our new siting case is going to be, we're building a pipeline and it's for oil, this is the route, and it's really none of your business how much it's going to carry. It might be 30,000, it might be 600,000. Just don't worry about it.
It's this big. Well, even that's tricky. We have one right now from Bakken that says we want to put natural gas liquids through instead of oil. I think this principle that we're talking about here applies to that situation too. That the fact that they want to carry natural gas liquids may no longer be applicable because of the new law. That question about whether they should transport oil or natural gas liquids.
Well, when you look at citing the purpose of the citing law, when you step back and say, what is the point of it? Does it really matter how much goes through those and how big these facilities are once you've cited it and gone through all the environmental? If they're going to certify that they aren't going to go in and impact anymore the site with the change in capacity. I mean, is that, I'm not advocating, I'm sincerely asking, what are the potential impacts?
Commissioner, I guess one thing I would point out is sometimes to the extent that we just have the bare minimum requirements in our site as we cite them in the first place, that makes sense. But to the extent that, say, for example, we have additional, say, emergency response, or maybe we go above and beyond saying this is important to us, and then that, I imagine, then a change in capacity would change how we looked at that order in the first place. Mm-hmm.
And have over the years gone beyond probably the minimal impact of just the construction to be looking long-term, the operation, and maybe appropriately so, maybe some could say it's not.
And at that point, they would be able to provide us a certification document, and if we would have concerns, we would have the opportunity to move in the public interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they always do have to certify. I mean, that is the requirement. Well, I guess I've talked a lot about my opinions on this, so I'm curious how you two would like to proceed. I know you've got a deadline and we've got two more cases to discuss.
Well, I mean, my number one goal here is I want to follow the intent of the law, and I don't think there's any doubt that that's going to happen. I still am not very clear on what we can best do, because I also want to clean up these documents. I don't want, as Alana's example was, to get years down the road and we've got these sitting out there and they're no longer matching what's actually occurring on the ground. So I'm still not hearing what the solution to that
is. Are you open to some process that isn't the official amending of the order process, which triggers a notice of opportunity for hearing, some other process that references the change in the law and that the company does, that this condition is no longer applicable, and so the company is certified it's going to be doing X, and we add that to the order instead of an official amendment, something of that nature that the staff could think through.
Let me ask a different question before I give you the answer. Is that exactly the kind of thing you were talking about, Alana, that you didn't think was a good idea? Because I thought at the beginning you said just like attaching a letter was not a very good way of doing regulatory business.
Well, that's my opinion, but it's your call.
Is there something in between?
And I'm really desperately trying to think. But I do want to say when you commented, Commissioner Fedorchuk, that was the most conservative approach possible. My suggestion, I thought, my name should be going up to the Supreme Court. I mean, really? No. I was proud of that. Okay. But anyway, I have been trying to think of an alternative, and I'm not coming.
Not too late.
I'm not coming up with it right this minute. But I do want to point out, we have a general statute for the commission that talks about amending orders. And so I'm a little bit careful here. If we amend orders some other way, it's like we're violating that statute, and that's still applicable. It says if you want to amend an order, send a notice.
Is that what that one says? Is that what you're referring
basically
to?
Basically, you can amend any order anytime you want with a notice. So it's not mandatory. I mean, I'm not saying that it doesn't takes all your discretion away. It's just in the kind of nagging at me in the back of my mind. Does it look like we're trying to avoid that provision? So to me, the cleanest thing is to do it, even if you acknowledge that they are constructing and you have no problem with that construction, you know, up front.
Cleanest is to amend the order.
Cleanest, but yeah. It is really your call.
Well, my answer is simple. I think we should amend the order. And it just keeps coming back to me about, or keep thinking about consistency, and we may get down the road and think of it differently. But it seems to be it's not going to get us into trouble. It seems like a safe route with.
Well, it could, because the companies could go yelp into the legislature that they're making us go through these hassles when you've spelled it out clearly. And then we have to go march in front of the top order and explain why we're creating all these additional burdens when they made it clear that they should be able to do what they, if they've gone through the siting process once, that's enough.
Yeah, what if this flows over into a pipeline that's doubling or tripling in capacity? You know, I might think, do they have enough shutoff valves in strategic locations now that the risk is three times over? And to Jack's point, emergency service, emergency response, teams, that type of thing. So I think this covers our bases going forward, and maybe we'll look at it differently down the road. I don't think it's an unwieldy process. I really don't. I realize, okay, you have to issue a notice of opportunity for hearing. That will probably be posted, will probably expire without any comment. And if there is, well, maybe it's something we need to know about.
Well, you won't be able to double or triple the size of a pipeline without changing it in some way more than booster pumps. I mean, you'd have to have known that it was going to have that capacity when you first, or that potential when you first sited it, like we did with Dakota Access. I mean, you might be able to increase it by a third, but, you know, I think that the thickness of the pipe and the size of it are going to have a pretty decent amount of constriction on how much bigger these facilities can get. But anyway,
I don't have
I'm outnumbered,
the exact figures.
Go ahead. We'll go ahead with the traditional, boring old way we've always done it. I think we got to start being a little more creative here, people. But if we want to do this.
Maybe the legislature would give us more creativity then.
Okay, so that's Langdon Wind.
Okay.
Jerry, which one do you want to do next?
To be clear, we want that order written very narrowly.
Yeah, agreed.
That notice, yeah.
The NSP 230 kV project, if we go with that one next, that's easiest, I think.
Sounds good.
In that case, they filed a change. It's just in a structure location on the line. And they're under the provision number 2 on the page 4 of my memo, electric transmission lines. Company understands and agrees to also inform the commission in writing of any plans to modify the transmission facility or of any plans to modify the site plan for the transmission facility. And so they've done that, and I would suggest that we're done. There's no need to approve it, and just let it go with that.
Doesn't it say the company understands and agrees to obtain written, am I in the wrong one, to obtain written approval from the commission?
Yeah, you're in the wrong one.
Page 4.
Under electric transmission lines.
Oh, number 2 on, okay.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So then as a policy going forward, they just need to tell us, and we don't need to be circulating these things to the commissioners and and giving staff approvals or anything under this language.
If I could, then I would just like to point out that it's quite a bit different from pipeline, where the pipeline company has to file under one of four scenarios, either changing the route within the corridor with no impact to exclusion and avoidance area, you know, the four scenarios that the pipelines have to go through. For the same.
So are we approving this language? Is that what you're saying, Jerry? Number
no,
2, that language?
That's
using that
certification.
We're already using that.
Provisions. So they're already under that language.
You're just wondering to see if we disagree?
Just to talk about it and say this is what our policy is. Now, if they go outside of
that. When did we start this policy?
I've got it going back to 2016.
It's something that a company wrote and we just adopted?
Lines.
It was a change in the certification to order provisions that was implemented. I don't know if it was implemented intentionally or accidentally, but
I remember we took out the approval language on there on purpose when we were talking about being able to change stuff within their certificate when that statute changed and the footprint law.
So you did this in an attempt to be more like the pipeline law?
No, I think it was meant to let them move stuff inside their corridor without jumping through hoops.
Which is good, except for the law requires that they at least certify that they aren't affecting exclusion avoidance areas and provide that documentation to us.
And
for pipelines and for...
No, the law doesn't apply to the electric transmission lines. It only applies to pipelines.
I mean, if you're... I thought you meant you were trying to make it consistent with the footprint law that allowed them to build more within the previous approved.
That's what I'm pointing out. Should we be making that consistent?
Yeah.
And what we have right now, what we're doing right now, isn't consistent.
But, you know, we've always had this ability for a Jerry Lane to approve such a thing under the rule. The rule has always had that much flexibility in it. And so maybe the approval language is not so bad, knowing that it's a staff approval. I mean, it can be over the phone or whatever. The commission doesn't have to see every one of them.
Yep.
But today, if it's not in there, it's not in there. There's no other provisions
right.
you didn't quote that are opposite to this?
If they're going outside of the corridor, then we would have to do a notice because they're outside of their certificate area. So
well, this outside one seems the corridor. Pretty easy.
Where does it say that, Jerry, in the certificate?
I think it's just the law. There'd have to be a notice to somebody's affected that never was in, that wasn't in the corridor.
Okay. But should we be adding moving forward? We can't do anything about this one, so this one's a done deal. But moving forward, should we be making it consistent, like Pat is suggesting, with the requirements? The requirements of the footprint law.
And we did a similar thing with wind generation. The first time that the language showed up where all they had to do was file something and maybe not get any approval, from what I can tell is with the Rowlett case, Rowlett Wind. And since that Rowlett Wind case, we've changed the certification to order provisions for wind generation to include that they file certifications that, you know, regarding exclusion and avoidance areas. And so we've done it for wind generation and other kinds of generation. We just haven't done it yet for electric transmission.
But to be clear, they have to file that, but it doesn't require us to take an action to approve it then.
Correct.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
So they just certify
it. More consistent.
That seems reasonable to me. I don't know. Do people object to that? Are the companies objecting to even filing that?
No. And actually, I suggested that in one case that they do it anyway, even though it doesn't say it.
It doesn't hurt. It's a good idea for them to just have that protection.
I mean, to fix that would be like it would be a change to the certification to order provisions that would include that kind of language.
Moving forward. I think you should do that.
Can you
make that draft and ship it around?
So then we still have the question about how do we treat the ones from the past that have this provision without requiring anything.
And remember the certification to order provisions is something that the company has agreed to do.
Right.
The company agrees that they will do this, they will do that, and they will do that. So I don't know how much of an order it is.
Are you saying all the ones that have this exact language, Pat? This language that doesn't require anything but informing us? This language right here?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Are you saying what do we do about the orders that have this language? Right. How many are there? Three?
Well, you know, that's the ones I caught. I might have missed one. I tried to put the numbers on the cases when I went through here. And so it's possible there might be a couple more.
For wind generation, this provision without requiring them to file anything about certifications started in June of 2015, and it probably didn't end until March of 2017.
And if you remember, we had some discussions up in Rowlett in a hearing. And so that Rowlett case and then the Lindell case changed our way of doing things. they were able to move stuff around inside their certificate without coming and getting permission. And we had some parameters that, you know, you can only put this many megawatts in, and so it got a little bit different there.
Well, for those these cases, they're not even asking to do anything different, right?
No.
So why are we worrying about it now?
Let's just
take care of the ones that actually are making changes, and let's help them do things as legally as we can and worry about these orders.
So what we talked about was going forward, that we would get that certification language for transmission lines into the certification related to order provisions.
Yeah.
And we do have a case before us right now where they want to make changes under the language that doesn't require them to do any certification, right?
If we can switch to that one, it's the first one.
Delete. So we're done with this anyways. Excel is there's taken care of.
And the first one is the elite thing. You know, as I say in the memo here, that started with them wanting to make a change in an access road location for the Thunder Spirit project. And that was the same procedure that we've done forever. And I told them they couldn't, because we had to give a notice, because in here it says, if you look at under wind projects, number two, Elite understands and agrees, it'll inform the commission in writing of plans to modify. It says at the end of that paragraph, approval may be granted after notice and opportunity for hearing. So they didn't have time for a notice, and so they built that road right through that low area.
Where we permitted it.
Yep.
They didn't make the modification, which would have improved it.
It's just an easy modification to go a little bit off this way and go on some higher ground, and we made them go right through the lower area, and so the road had to be built up more. There was too much of a slope in there to get the Narcelle through. But they couldn't wait a month. They got construction crews and stuff going through there. And
so now they're writing to ask us to modify that order to take out the approval may be granted after notice and opportunity for hearing.
Yeah, they got another project to build here this fall. And so ahead of time, they'd like to nip it in the bud before it. And so that's what we've got.
I think that makes sense.
But for me, I'd like to see a way to not have to do a notice on these. It just doesn't make sense. It was never the intent. When this was put in the certification document, the purpose was to find a way for them to make these last-minute changes as they're going through in construction, while the construction crews don't have to stand by and wait for them.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if there's a way to interpret this differently, and I think we did in the past.
Well, question number one is on their modification, right? They're requesting to modify their order.
Yeah.
And to amend the order. So that's question number one.
Yeah.
I personally, all they're doing is taking out that approval may be granted and substituting it for that they'll get written approval from the commission prior to any modifications.
So
that's consistent with what we've been doing for modifications and other types of things.
Another thing.
I don't disagree.
Another thought I had here says that, you know, this is what they agreed to do. And if you don't need to hold them to it, then it says approval may be granted after notice and opportunity for hearing. It seems like that could be a permissive language
rather than
a mandate.
You're talking about moving forward. Let's just go ahead and agree that we're going to amend this one, since that's what they've asked for and they want to do it. So let's do that. And now you're talking about what do we do about other orders that have the same language in it?
Well, if you look at all of those cases up there underneath number two, most of them have always had changes during construction. And we had that process where I sent you guys a description of it and said I was going to give a staff approval. And so we've done this the whole time, and that's what is at question here.
So you're basically saying we've been ignoring the approval may be granted after notice of opportunity for hearing.
Well, I don't know if ignoring it is right, but frankly, I didn't want it in there when it got put in there.
Just because you didn't like it doesn't mean we don't have to follow
but
it.
The interpretation at that time was that it wasn't binding, that we could just keep on doing what we were doing. And we've been doing it like this for years.
It's the law of personal preference.
So I think we could fix it going forward easily just by taking that language out. These projects are all completed now, so I mean it's...
Well, so there's no need to go back and change those, to Randy's point. Nobody's asking about them. Nobody's...
Yeah, I don't think so.
So, but moving forward, an elite, let's go through the process of amending it. They want to do it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And moving forward, let's take it out of the certification language that we're using.
Yeah. I think that same language... is probably in the Foxtail.
When companies are drafting their orders, do we require them to use a template? Because how do we find all the different changes that they make? It concerns me that sometimes new language gets slipped in without it, and then it becomes the template after that.
When they draft an order, we go through it and... try to catch everything like that. But the certificate relating to order provisions has already been signed and executed before the order is drafted.
And that comes from a template.
You have it at the hearing.
They can change it.
They can change it.
But we know what the changes are, though, in that. Right? There's a discussion about changes there. But on the drafting of the order, that just comes in. So you may not necessarily... pick up on every change that is not consistent with our template.
And that's something for every case that we do where we get proposed orders, maybe more so for citing, but we need to go through the orders and make sure that we want to say what they're saying.
I'm assuming that you guys are starting with your own order and then incorporating good ideas they have in their proposed order into that, as opposed to starting with theirs and then might inadvertently let something go that we never planned.
Maybe.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Maybe.
We work extremely hard. We don't just take canned
luggage. No.
Yeah.
We go through it with a fine-tooth comb.
And the other thing is it has been through more than one of us, too.
Yeah. And we give bonus points to companies that use the correct commission template when they do a proposed order.
Well, and this is off subject, but it's one of those things that's up there. Can't we say, here's the template, use the template, and underline the language that is not consistent with
We've
the template so you can identify it?
Because it makes it easier for us if their order is formatted right. And we'll go through and well, if it's not formatted right, it can be a real mess for us to have to do it right. So we try to make them get it to us in a proper template.
I believe that's very doable. That's what I do when I'm on a citing case with the certification documents. If there's any disagreements or concerns, I always have them give us an underlined version of where the corrections are.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just assume that's the same one as the next one. You can look back and see this one's a little bit different and that sticks out.
Right. So if when the judge says, well, can we have a draft order by proposed order by such and such a date, using the commission template and underlining changes accordingly so we know at least the basics are in there. I mean, why can't we require them to do that?
I think we could. I mean, most of the people that work before the commission, they already know what the orders are supposed to look like.
So frequently it looks pretty close to where our general template a lot of times.
I've just been sort of shocked over the years how much difference there is and how some things are worded differently and some things are just missing. Like, oh, we didn't include that on this one, I guess. You know, and that's just...
And sometimes there's a reason for things being different.
Yeah, probably.
When I do an order for a citing case, I start with a template, with our template. And then I pull over. I have two screens so I can look at theirs and ours.
Sure.
And so I do it manually, what you're suggesting. And I decide whether what they're saying is more accurate than what I'm saying or what we have in our template is more accurate than what they have.
That's how Randy wants it done. I agree with him. If you don't go the template route.
Yeah. And I think we do have the template for the citing orders. Yeah. But I don't.
But it's all fair.
There's lots of other cases that we don't have a template for.
Well, the facts, yeah, facts are specific, but there's also a lot of standard stuff.
There's a lot of standard stuff, I understand that.
Yeah.
I did just want to point out one thing, and this is something that Jerry said a little bit earlier, that he said he didn't know to the extent that the certification provisions are as much of an order. They are absolutely the order. Everything historical about the certification documents and the way it's written, they are the order and provisions of our orders. And I just want to make sure that was clear.
Okay, do you guys have what you need? Have we covered everything?
Can we do the MSB?
Yep.
Yeah, we're going to leave that. But we're going to change it going forward.
Change it going forward. You're going to make the elite modifications and change this language going forward, too, in future orders, and leave all other orders that have the language that's been flagged now until they come forward with a problem, if ever they do.
Is that all of them?
I think so.
A quick question. With the new law, so like, let's say an energy generation facility, a wind farm, they can add a lot more capacity if they want, right? Can they change? Could they change and say, well, if you have 150 megawatt wind farm, so they can add 50 and make it 200 without our approval? Could they add 50 megawatts of solar in there without our approval as long as it's on the site?
It'd be a similar facility, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
That's a good, very good question. Yeah. It's the same. It has to be the same type of facility. So if you have a wind, an electric generation facility, what's the interpretation
of
it?
So all this, right? You know, kind of keep things moving forward in a pretty relaxed way mode that started the last few years is going to go on until the pendulum swings
right.
So far, and somebody says, well, I'm building a beautiful solar plant, and then the next thing you know, it's a nuclear plant or something like that.
I think a lot of times the easements, though, that the wind facilities have would prevent something like that. But I don't know for sure.
Right, something just that extreme.
Yeah.
Something this will all work well until someone...
Another thing is that they have an interconnection with the transmission grid, and that will be limited to a certain megawatt because they have to study the transmission system to see if it'll take the power. So,
it could be megawatts of solar versus megawatts of wind.
Yeah.
It wouldn't matter.
Not, I don't think it would matter for the interconnection agreement what it was, but just how much of it is going onto the grid.
So wasn't the Bakken link part of this too, or was that just in that they have a chance? We're not dealing with that today.
Well, the Bakken link, if the commission had decided that we didn't need to do a notice to amend an order, I would have asked about the Bakken link. But Bakken link asked for an amendment of the order.
Okay. Very good then. Anything else? The good of the order? Okay. Happy Independence Day, everyone. This work session is concluded.
Thanks.